Philippians. Who wrote it, when, and why? Written by Bart Ehrman. Read by Ken Teutsch. Now that I have provided a nutshell summary of the letter to the Philippians in my previous post, I can move into the questions of authorship, date, and motivating purpose. Who, when, and why? Philippians is almost always considered a Pauline letter, one of the seven undisputed epistles. There seems very little reason to doubt it. The letter is filled with Pauline themes and thoughts. It uses his typical kind of writing style. Its concerns line up with what we find in other of his writings, and the presupposed historical circumstances are perfectly in line with what we would expect. As I've indicated, the letter claims to be written from prison, but we do not know where. The where matters a good bit for the when, since if it was written, as many have argued, from Rome, then it must be toward the end of Paul's life, since he went there after all his other known journeys and was apparently martyred there, so in the early 60s. If it was written from somewhere else, say Ephesus, then it more likely dates to the mid-50s. That's become the more widely accepted view. Far more important is the question of whether this letter actually is a letter at all. It turns out there are good reasons for suspecting it is two letters that have been cut and spliced together. We had seen that this is almost certainly the case for 2 Corinthians, which is at least two combined letters, but maybe as many as five, which is where I think the evidence leads. The evidence of Philippians is not as strong, but nonetheless strong enough. I think this is two letters. I explain the reasons in my textbook on the New Testament, which I give in an edited version here. To begin with, the first two chapters of Philippians sound very much like a friendship letter written by Paul to his converts, a kind of ancient letter that spends most of its time celebrating and renewing close relations. The specific occasion of the letter is the one I've already described, the visit of Epaphroditus with a monetary gift. Paul mentions the visit in 2:25-30, but does not mention the reason for his visit until the very end in chapter 4. While there ministering to Paul, Epaphroditus was taken ill. The Philippians heard of his illness and grew concerned. Epaphroditus, in turn, learned of their concern and became distraught over the anxiety that he had caused. Fortunately, his health returned and he was now set to make his journey back home to Philippi. Paul wrote this letter to keep the Philippians informed of Epaphroditus' situation and to express his pleasure that all had turned out well. Paul sends the letter from prison, Philippians 1:7, and uses the letter to comment on his own adversity and to reassure his congregation that it has turned out for the good. As a result of his bondage, others have become emboldened to preach, 1:12-18. Paul uses his own situation to explain that suffering is the destiny of Christians in the present age, 1:29-30, a message comparable to that which he proclaimed in the Corinthian correspondence. As I indicated, he also uses the situation to provide some general words of admonition. The Philippians are to be unified, serving one another rather than themselves, and thereby following the example of Christ, 2:1-11. One of the most striking features of this letter comes after these general exhortations. The friendly and joyful tone that characterizes the letter's first two chapters shifts almost without warning at the beginning of chapter 3. One oddity is that if one didn't know that there were two more chapters left in the book, it would appear the letter was drawing to a close at the end of chapter 2. Paul has explained his own situation, given some admonitions, stated the purpose of his writing, and provided his concluding exhortation. Finally, brothers and sisters, rejoice in the Lord, Philippians 3:1. Why does he say finally, but then change the subject completely and continue writing for another two chapters? Indeed, the words that immediately follow are hard to understand in the context. To write the same things to you is not troublesome to me, and for you it is a safeguard. 3:1. Why would anyone find his exhortations to rejoice troubling? Paul immediately launches into a vitriolic attack on people who are his enemies, presumably in Philippi, people whom he calls dogs, evil workers, and those who mutilate the flesh, 3:2. He then defends his own understanding of the gospel against these false teachers, 3:3-11. A peaceful letter of friendship has now become a harsh letter of warning, if it is the same letter. What is particularly interesting is that Epaphroditus is again mentioned in these closing chapters. If you didn't know better, though, you would think that he had just arrived, not that he had been with Paul already for an extended period of time. For example, see 4:18. I am fully satisfied now that I have received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent. In chapter 2, he had obviously been there for a long time already. In any case, it is now clear why Epaphroditus has come and why Paul is penning this part of the letter. The Philippians have sent him to bring a financial contribution, and Paul is writing a thank you note. But the timing of his response is puzzling. If Epaphroditus has been with Paul for such a long period of time as indicated in chapter 2, long enough for him to become deathly ill, for the Philippians to get word of it, for him to learn that they were distressed, and for him then to recover, why is Paul only now writing to tell them that he has received the gift? Surely he was in communication with them before this, since they have heard that Epaphroditus arrived and that he later became deathly ill. Scholars differ on how to evaluate the various pieces of this contextual puzzle. One solution is that there are two letters that have been edited together here, written at different times and for different occasions. Here's how the chronology would work. After Paul established the Philippian church, he left to pursue his apostolic work elsewhere. The Philippians learned of his needs in jail and sent him a gift of money through the agency of one of their leading members, Epaphroditus. Paul thankfully received the gift and learned from Epaphroditus himself about two major problems in the community. Some false teachers had begun to stress the need to keep the Jewish law, see Philippians 3:3-6, and two women in the congregation had argued over something in public, 4:2-3. He wrote the Philippians a letter, partially embodied now in chapters 3 and 4, thanking them for the gift, warning them against the false teachers, and urging Euodia and Syntyche to get along. After Paul sent this letter, Epaphroditus became ill, the Philippians learned of it and became concerned, Epaphroditus heard of their concern and became distraught, and finally he recovered. In the course of the communication that was obviously going back and forth, Paul learned of the improved situation in Philippi. When Epaphroditus became well enough to travel, Paul sent another letter back with him, a friendship letter, explaining how things now fared with him and providing some renewed but general exhortations to the community to maintain their unity in Christ. Most of this letter is now found in Philippians 1 and 2. Some such scenario would explain why there are such differences between the first and second parts of the letter. It is important to note, the letter written earlier is put at the end of the book, the letter written later at the beginning. Parts of both have been cut when they were combined. If this is the case, then the who, Paul, of the letter is the same. The why would be different for the beginning and end of the letter, and the when would be probably in the mid-50s, but maybe a couple of months apart.